I believe we were in step three and we were on page 62. One of the things that's so necessary for us as alcoholics, prior to doing the recovery work that's laid out in this text, is to gain a clear understanding of our specific truth as far as our powerlessness is concerned. We need to get to the bottom of our alcoholism. We need to understand that we're powerless over alcohol. We need to find out if that's true in our case. We need to see if we have the obsession of the mind, see if we have the allergy of the body, or the phenomenon of craving. I believe it's also necessary to examine some of the spiritual malady and the way that manifests itself in our life. You know, when I first started coming around, I thought, yeah, you guys could probably place me in a position where I could be separated from alcohol for a while. But, you know, I'm not expecting any miracles as far as my quality of life. You know, I just didn't think that Alcoholics Anonymous was going to provide answers for that. I pretty much thought that that was my, you know, I'm going to have to come up with the answers for that. And I found that working through the 12 steps really does provide a lot of answers for my quality of life issues. As we start moving into step four, what we're going to be looking for really is what blocks us off. We're going to find out the truth about what blocks us off from God, what blocks us off from our fellow man, and what blocks us off from having the type of quality of life that that is possible. You know, it's certainly possible for us to have lives that are much better than the ones we have when we come in, that's for sure. Alcoholism has a way of deteriorating so many aspects of our life, and there's just something about the alcoholic condition that wants to deny that there's a problem. You know, I mean, when I first walked in my first year in AA, I was incredibly sick. I was just incredibly sick, and the only way I really learned that was by staying around, staying sober, working the recovery process and beginning to recover. That gave me some perspective. You know, so if you're brand new and you're in your first year or two and you think everything's fine, it's not. You know, you're a lot sicker than you think you are. And the best way to find that out is to keep coming and allow the recovery process to treat your alcoholism in all of its various manifestations. Step two is one of those steps that we take, I think, in stages, came to believe. If you would have told me walking through the door of Alcoholics Anonymous that God is going to restore me to sanity, He's going to help clean up all my problems in my life, it's only through Him that I'm going to remain separated from alcohol, only through the power of God that I'm going to remain separated from alcohol, I would not have believed you. It was a process of coming to believe that those things are truths in my experience. In the very, very beginning, I believed in Alcoholics Anonymous and my sponsor, Fish Food Phil. I trusted Fish Food Phil implicitly because he had come from a place that I had come from, drugs and alcohol in a really bad way, and he'd worked himself up to a really nice job, a home in Basking Ridge. He'd gotten custody of his children, away from his ex-wife, who had them when he was drinking and using. He was going to the friggin' PPA, for God's sake, you know? And I'm thinking, okay, whatever he did seems to have worked. I'm going to trust this man. And he was very, very kind to me. And I didn't particularly care a hell of a lot for all of you in AA in the beginning. I don't know if anybody can relate to this, but have you ever had resentments about people in the meetings? No. Of course not, right? No. How can we possibly have resentments about fellow brothers and sisters in the wonderful fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous? Well, I hated 90% of you. And I'd talk about you behind your back with the best of them. And I was just a real piece of work. I was shattered up. And all of my personal relationship skills were questionable at best. Mostly they were just abysmal. They basically put me in a position where I had become isolated from humanity. I mean, my life had gotten so small. My existence had gotten so small. Basically was a room and a job, and anything else I found so unbearably uncomfortable that I just would not participate in it. You know, I mean, I had rules. I don't know if anybody else had rules. I would not ride in your car unless you had booze. And if you had a problem with me drinking in your car, then I didn't go with you wherever we were going. Right, Jimmy?
Jimmy, I'll tell you.
And I mean, you know, these are not the best rules to have. I don't know how many poor people got DWIs because they had me in the passenger seat. You know, I'd start a wrestling match with them while they were driving down the road and get pulled over. But anyway, my life had gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. And it really was questionable to me when I first came in here whether or not God was really the key to all this stuff. I rather put my faith and my trust in the people, in the meetings and the people. And I became, the one thing that I did right in the beginning was I became consistent with my meeting attendance right off the bat. I went to a meeting every single night unless I had passed out from exhaustion or something prior to being able to make it. I mean, I think I did 89 and 90 or something. And I started listening to my sponsor. Now, these were not really the days, back in the days, when somebody would take you through the big book or had a methodical process of following the instructions and moving you through the 12 steps. It was basically a wing it and pray type of fellowship at that period of time. When you asked somebody how to do a step, you could get all kinds of answers, some of them good and some of them questionable. But anyway, I did become willing to try to start changing the way I was living. And I slowly started to believe that there may be a power greater than myself that was helping me, because it just seemed like there was many, many times where I was powerless and the needed power showed up. I understand it today as the grace of God. A couple of times, well, one of them was when I last separated from alcohol. It was from my last drunk. I was able to stay away from booze long enough to get involved in AA, and that is a miracle in itself. And I recognize that today as the grace of God. And the longer I stay sober, the more I see the grace of God in more aspects of my life where I didn't really give it credit before. But anyway, as we move into step three tonight, again, it's at levels. I don't think you can come to terms with your true unmanageability and truly how screwed up you are really quickly. We'd have a much higher suicide rate if that was true. I think that God is gracious and allows us to slowly come to the conclusion that we're out of our minds in a very gentle way. And I slowly started to recognize that the way I was living might not be the best way. As an alcoholic, I had an ego the size of Detroit, and I thought that I had a unique perspective on the way the world ran and how people interacted in it. And I thought that I was kind of tortured a little bit by this perception, because it was probably so much more acute than the normal person's. And I thought that, you know, because I had this true picture of the way things worked, I had to drink, because that's an unbearable truth to be burdened with, you know. I had all these crazy ideas, but slowly I started to realize that I needed to change the way I was living. And in the very beginning, I tried to do it myself. In other words, without enlisting God's aid, I just tried to be a better person. And I tried to not swear, and I tried to not, do this, that, and the other thing. And I didn't have a hell of a lot of luck with it. But I think that the grace of God is contingent on willingness and effort. I really believe that in my case. Because I wasn't doing a really good job of changing, but I was making an effort. And I think that that's what kept me sober. You know, you see people that shouldn't be sober in AA. You know, they're doing things that would get you drunk in 10 seconds. I've come to believe that they're making an effort to get better, and God allows them to stay sober. It may not be the way you would want it, but that's how I think it works. So I was basically running on the grace of God until I started working through this process. I read this last week. I'm going to read it again because it's so powerful. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. And again, the arrogance of the alcoholic. When I first read this, I read this in rehab. It's the first time I ever read this paragraph. And I thought, that's Harry. You know what I mean? Harry is self-centered. I can tell this paragraph's about you. And it only dawned on me slowly that this paragraph is about me. This paragraph is still about me. And when I could admit to some of this stuff, when I could say, yes, this is truly what moves me through the day, my selfishness and my self-centeredness, only then is there some hope for some change. You know, because if I deny it, if I don't even look at it, I don't think I'm ever going to change. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. I had the privilege today of hearing a fist up, hearing somebody's fist up. It was one of those nice five-hour ones. And I got to see a beautiful picture, because when you hear a fist up, you hear the whole thing. You hear the whole deal. All that they can deal with at that period of time, if they're honest and thorough with it, you hear the whole thing. And I got the picture. It was a beautiful picture. All the cast of characters that this individual was talking about, they were all wonderful characters. And I'm thinking, man, what a lucky guy to have all of these people in his life. And yet he's resentful at all of them. They're all making the fear in the inventory list. And I'm thinking, man, what a great cast of characters. This guy's firmly planted in the middle of the most exciting type of humanity you can have. And that's what I'm seeing. You know, he's seeing a hostile universe coming at him because of his self-centered worldview. And I stopped him in the middle of this, and I said, is that everything you're talking about? You have to understand, you're looking at it like you are the world, and you're looking at all of this other stuff, how it affects you. How does it interact with you? Is it according to your wishes, the way this is all interacting? This is the selfishness that kills us as alcoholics, because we believe that everything revolves around us, and that's our perspective. Our perspective is not, you know, Ron's a good guy. Our perspective is, Ron can really help me out with this thing. You know, I mean, it's just, it's a twisted way to look at it. And it's part of alcoholism. I don't think you can be an alcoholic without suffering from this malady, this selfish malady. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. I didn't think so when I first read this paragraph, because I thought this paragraph was about Harry. I thought they put this in the book to keep people like Harry in line. I couldn't even fathom that I was terminally self-centered. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. God makes the shift in perception possible, whereby we start to not perceive reality how it revolves around us. We start to have a more healthy worldview. You know, humility can sometimes be defined as an accurate self-appraisal. You know, not overblown one way or the other. We want to be the worst, or we want to be the best. We can't be middle of the road, for God's sake. You know, the middle of the road is just not where an alcoholic wants to be. So we have to start shifting our perception. There often seems to be no way of entirely getting rid of self without God's aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. I love those sentences, because those sentences that's a loophole closer. Those sentences. If we're really religious, we can say to ourselves, what are they going to teach me about spiritual living? I'm a deacon, you know, or something. I'm a lay minister. So what are you going to teach me about this stuff? Well, you can have the philosophical convictions. You can have the philosophies and the codes of life. But let me just ask you this. Were you able to live up to those codes? Or did you disappoint yourself over and over again in your behavior? Did you have good intentions and bad behavior? You know, that's really what I think they're talking about here. I had a Methodist Sunday school type thing going on when I was a kid, and I knew things like you don't steal and you don't lie. I mean, they taught me that when I still had the trap door in the back of my pajamas. You know what I mean? I knew that stuff. But somewhere along the line, I deviated from those rules. You know, selfishness and self-centeredness took over. But I always knew what was right, basically, although I would make efforts to ignore it. You know, I knew it was wrong to you know, engage in a lot of the behavior I was engaging in. I knew it was illegal. I knew I was not being a good friend if I was doing certain things. And, you know, I even felt some guilt about it, but it didn't stop me. You know? So I learned how to deal with guilt. You know, just give me another beer and I'm okay with the guilt. So I had a lot of moral and philosophical convictions, and I did know how to live a moral life. I had the mother and the father with the little Cape Cod house and Basking Ridge, you know, with the Sunday school and the Boy Scouts. And I can't blame any of my stuff on that, you know. Believe me, I deviated into alcoholism and self-centeredness quite on my own thinking. But I knew what was right and what was wrong. It got to the point, especially in the end of my drinking, where I couldn't live up to right living. If I tried, I didn't have the power to be a good person. I didn't have the power to be a selfless individual. I would not have had the power to just think about you as much as I thought about myself. It'd be impossible. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be the director. He's the principal. We're his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas were simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. So I love all the information prior to this in this chapter. It paints a really good picture of the self-centered individual and some of the problems that go along with being that type of a terminally self-centered person. So we're moving into the third step. The third step, I've come to view and I've come to believe that the third step is a large decision. It's a decision that borders on a lot of territories. But a couple of the territories that it borders on is if we're going to make an attempt to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand them, then we should know, we should have some type of a relationship with God. And otherwise, we're just turning stuff over to something we don't even believe in, or that we have no relationship with, or we're not engaging in communication with. I love the way the early AAs did this. Rather than drag up a whole bunch of theological concepts or Nicene creeds or different types of worship rituals, they start at a really, really basic level. They start at the level of the type a type of relationship that any of us, I believe, any of us can begin to participate in. And it really shouldn't, unless you believe in some really strange type of belief. I don't think that this particular relationship directive is going to go at odds with anybody's belief system. Whatever belief systems you have, this should not be a problem. And first I need to understand that God is going to be the director and I'm going to be the directed. If he's going to direct, then I need to follow some direction. Now, I'm just making a decision to move toward this at this period of time, okay? I believe that I learn how to become directed when I move into steps 10 and especially steps 11. Step 11 really shows me some spiritual exercises that bring me to a place where I can become directed by God. But I'm making a decision to move toward that now. He's going to be the principal, and I'm going to be the agent. And the way I usually describe this is, let's say you're an insurance agent, and you're sent out on the road to do business. There are certain guidelines that you have to follow. If you're with XYZ Insurance, they've got protocol. They have some rules and regulations that you should follow. And if you follow those rules and regulations, they'll back up whatever deal you do. You're going to have the whole weight of the home office behind you. You know, if the person dies and you sold them the policy and everybody did everything right, they get the money. You know, everything works fine. Well, I think that if we start to live life on spiritual lines, if we start to follow decent behavior, if we start to take a lot of these exercises, what we're doing is we're living life on the lines we think God would have us live on, and I believe we're backed up by the home office. Who in here has had experiences with power greater than themselves in certain situations that has really seemed to help and sometimes even save your life? I mean, I know I have. And I'm a firm believer today I believe that God works in mysterious ways. I'm never going to be able to figure out exactly how that happens. But I have personal experience with a power greater than myself accessing me in one way or another and getting me through situations that I just was not going to be able to get through unless something was going to help me. And I've got many experiences like that. So I know that that's true. But again, I'm just making a decision to start developing toward this dependence, toward the God dependence instead of the self dependence. He's going to be the father and we're his children. Again, you look at the concept of a parent. You know, what is a parent? A parent gives you life, nurtures you, protects you until you can protect yourself, you know, helps you where you can't help yourself, teaches you. And I believe that that's also what God does with me. I believe I'm taught. I believe I'm protected. I believe I've been given life by God. So specific relationship outlooks that I can believe in and I can start to work toward. I'm not going to have any problem with that. So when we take such a position, all sorts of remarkable things follow. And here are some third step promises. I think any time you take a big step or a big action, you're going to get promises. The more revolutionary the action, you know, the more against the ego the action is, the larger the promises are going to be. But here are some of the things that you can expect if you really and truly take this type of a position. We had a new employer being all powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Again, one of the other things that I believe is inherent in the third step today, and that I might not have in the past, is I believe I'm making a decision to help God, to help other human beings, to try to carry the message to other alcoholics, to try to be of service with humanity. All throughout the rest of the steps, you're going to find all the prayers, all the instructions, all the exercises are leading us to be more effective helping mankind in one way or the other. If it's not specifically with alcoholics, it's teaching us how to carry a good message, carry a message of love. And established on such footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, we discovered we could face life successfully. As we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. I was explaining to the individual that I was doing the fifth step with today after the fear inventory. I basically was saying, because your perspective on reality is from a self-centered viewpoint and you're looking at everything else around you, how it interacts with you, and you're making decisions based on self, for what you can get, you know, satisfying your own desires, that's placing you in a position that's going to generate a lot of fear. And I tried to explain it to him this way. I said, let's say you've come to believe that there is a power greater than yourself that can restore you to sanity and can help relieve all of these things that we've talked about in the first step. Let's say you've come to believe that. And you make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of that power. And you start taking actions that you believe God would approve of. You start to be a team player. And you start to live life along God's will. What is going to get through to you that God doesn't want to get through to you? You know, where is your basis now for fear if you're going to be protected by God, if he's going to give you the power to handle the situations that you don't have the power to handle? If these things are going to start happening, where is the basis for your fear now? You're going to have a lot less reason to be fearful living life along God's will than you do living along your own selfish will. And believe it or not, this individual started to understand that. It's kind of a hard concept to explain. Again, it's easier to understand when you're on the other side of it. I've got experience with this, so I understand it and I believe it. But for the individual that's standing in front of steps two and steps three, you know, sometimes they just have to take it on faith and believe that something's going to happen if they start moving into it. Because again, I think the third step is in stages. I know it was in my experience. All right, so hopefully we've come to the point where we're willing to go through the rest of the steps because we believe that that's God's will. We've made a decision to turn our will and our lives over, so that's the next plan. We've become willing to try to seek a relationship with God on the lines of director, principal, parent. We've become willing to start moving toward that. There's an affirmation prayer that they give us once we get to that point. And this is the affirmation prayer. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me, and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Note that it does not say, take away all the stuff that makes me uncomfortable so I can feel better. You know, or take away my alcoholism so I can blow out of these meetings and get back to primetime TV. It does not say any of that stuff. It says basically, relieve me of the bondage of self, take away my difficulties, and I will bear witness to this process. I will carry the message of my recovery to other people. You know, that's the deal we make. I've seen a lot of people go back on this deal. I talked about a couple of weeks ago. I talked about what happens in our fellowship. I'm not going to even talk about the first 5 years because there's all kinds of heavy drinkers that leave AA in the first 5 years. There's all kinds of things that happen. But from 5 years to 10, I'd say anybody with more than 5 years, 50% of them have less than 10. For people with more than 10 years, 50% of them have less than 15. For people with more than 15 years, 50% of them have less than 20. You follow what I'm saying. We lose 50% of our fellowship every 5 years. And I don't know where they go. I don't know about a secret club. Nobody's clued me into that. I think a lot of them are reneging on this deal. And I need to tell you that that's a very, very dangerous thing to do. I've seen, just in the last year, I've seen two people with over 25 years sober in this area drink. And this one guy was a steady fixture at all the meetings. Steady fixture. Had the most underlined step book I've ever seen in my life. It had, every page had 750 underlines. Drink. Okay? I think that we really need to take this stuff seriously, and we need to ingrain it into our lives so it becomes part of our life process, not part of our recovery, part of our life process, part of the way we move through the world. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. You know, when you are ready at last to abandon yourself utterly to him, it's usually because alcohol has just kicked your ass so awful bad. But I'll tell you what, when you are at that point and you are willing to at last abandon yourself to God, some amazing things happen. Amazing things start happening. I usually explain it like this to the newer people. You enter a time of the amazing coincidence time. Anybody remember this from early sobriety? Like, things just started, amazing coincidences started happening. It was almost like God was saying, I'm going to set this guy up so he knows I'm covering his back, type of thing. Anybody remember those times, the times of amazing coincidence? I believe that that's the grace of God shining through like a beacon, letting me know that I'm on the right path. And to this day, it still happens to me, you know, and I don't look upon them anymore as coincidences. I look upon them as, God's interaction in my life. I really, truly believe that today. We found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person, such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor. The wording was, of course, quite optional so long as we expressed the idea of voicing it without reservation. This is only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, in effect, sometimes a very great one was felt at once. And the humbly and the honesty, again, I believe comes from having a bottom. I don't know alcoholics, it's very difficult for an alcoholic to move through this spiritual process on virtue alone. You know, just for the sake of, I want to be a better person. We usually need a little bit more motivation than that. We usually need to be able to look back and connect alcohol to this process. It's always very, very important to connect alcohol to these action steps. If only we could think this clearly. Take the third step, die an alcoholic death. A or B. But we don't think like that. You know, we think that there's a door number C, and we look like crazy for it. But if only we could think as clearly as make the third step decision, die an alcoholic death. If we can connect these steps back to alcohol in that way, it really, really helps us move through this process. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action. You think they mean take like a couple of years and get your brains out of hock before you start writing inventory? You think that's what they mean? I don't think so. There's always somebody when you're in a step meeting and you start talking about your experience doing the steps early on in your sobriety. A lot of times you run into people whose experience is different than yours, people who waited a really long time to do the fourth step. And unfortunately, the way it can sometimes happen is the individual that waited 5 years to do a fourth step thinks that you should wait 5 years too, because he's still sober and, you know, I had to get my brains out of hock. And they look upon their experience as being the defining experience. And anything that opposes that is in direct confrontation with their ego and the way they view themselves. So you can throw people's defenses up. Has this ever happened to anybody? You can throw people's defenses up by talking about your experience in this work if they haven't had the experience from this work. They think you're nuts. One of the great old-timers from around this area was he helped a million people, and I'll never take anything away from him. He was a fellowship guy, and he helped a million people. But all of the people he sponsored, when they came up to him and they said, "Hey, I think it's time for me to do a fourth step." You know what he said? "Kid, you're too stupid to do a fourth step." He had never done one himself. You know what I'm saying? He didn't have the experience with the fourth step. I waited, my personal experience was I waited until I had about 8 months. And then I didn't even do a big book fourth step. I did what I thought they were looking for, which is a combination of life story, dirty little secrets, personality patterns that I was aware of. I still got a lot of relief from this because I think God grades us on willingness, not on perfection. But I've found a better way, and I found a better way through my experience. And instead of saying to myself, "Well, I waited 8 months and then I did a life story," when you get 8 months, I'm going to show you how to do a life story because that's what I did. And then when you have 3 years, I'll show you how to do a big book, four step. I'm not going to do that because I'm playing games and I'm going contrary to what this book says. And I believe that if you're going to make a mistake, you can cost somebody their lives. You really can. One of the things that they used to say when I was first coming around was, if the person's ready, there's nothing you can say wrong. If they're not ready, there's nothing you can say right. And I understand what they mean by that, but I don't believe it anymore. I don't believe it anymore. I think that we can screw this up. I think we can hurt people. We can devastate people by giving them bad information. And people that aren't quite ready can be helped to get ready. And you certainly can say something wrong to somebody who's ready. So again, I believe in following the book Alcoholics Anonymous, because then if somebody drinks or if it doesn't work for somebody, it's not me trying to make stuff up. I think you should do this. I don't have any personal experience with it, but I think that you should try. I'm not going to do that to anybody. That's really irresponsible. So I try to stay as close to the big book instructions as I can. It says here, though our third step decision is a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. You think they meant at once, or do you think they meant 5 years? You got to heal a little bit before you do a four step. I mean, there's a lot of bad information out there, and it only hurts the real alcoholics. Unfortunately, I'm one of those. But the fact of the matter is when it says at once, I would think that they mean at once. And if you follow the narrative of this text, this could be in the first day of someone's sobriety. It really could. There's nothing in here that's slowed you down yet. I'm not saying that it's wise to start taking somebody through the four step in the first day of their sobriety. I've done it in a couple of cases, but I don't normally do it. But again, do you want to err on the side of taking too long or doing it too quickly? I think that less harm could take place by doing it quickly than it could by taking too long. At least this is what the book is going to tell us. It says our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Again, Bill Wilson and the first ton of alcoholics were all failed businessmen. So like any good wisdom teacher, what Jesus would do if he was with fishermen, he'd tell a story about fish. He'd do the parable about fish. If he was with shepherds, he'd start talking about sheep. You know, something somebody can realize, somebody can identify with. Well, Bill Wilson was around a bunch of failed businessmen, so he starts likening our personal inventory to a business inventory so that we can understand what he's getting at. And rather than start getting into this tonight, I'm going to stop here, and we're going to pick it up next Tuesday with step four. I'm going to turn the meeting over to my friend,